Section 4. Missing Christian Evidence. However you choose to deal with the peculiar silence of secular, pagan, and Jewish literature throughout the first and most of the second century, I surveyed your options before, we at least have the few things that Christians did choose to preserve, and that starts with their own literature. Yet even there, the selection is strange. Among the datable, nothing at all from Christianity's entire first 60 years, except what later became canonized as the New Testament. And that represents what can only have been a fraction of what existed, even just counting only the letters that must have been written across all those decades, as I noted again in Element 22. After that, the first thing we get is a single, very long letter from Clement of Rome, written to the church in Corinth, supposedly in or near the year 95, or in any event, after the deaths of Peter and Paul. Then, supposedly, a collection of letters from Ignatius to various churches in what is now Turkey, traditionally dated around 110, but, as we'll see, more probably dating decades later. And nothing else until after the year 120, almost a century after the religion began. It's hard to imagine how a church can thrive across three continents for almost 100 years and produce almost no letters or literature. Of all the second century Christian writings we know about, the most helpful might have been the Histories of the Church, written sometime between 120 and 180 by Papias and Hegesippus. We otherwise know of no historical treatments of early Christianity except Acts and writings after the second century, which are so rife with legend and dogma as to be useless for our purposes. We shall soon see that Papias and Hegesippus were actually very much worse in this regard. I will therefore discuss what we know about those books after treating 1 Clement and the Ignatian epistles, because Hegesippus and Papias evidently represent the best historical research that Christians were bothering with in that century. But we can't proceed without also noting what we don't have. Again, we should have the hundreds of letters that must have been written in the first century, possibly dozens by Paul alone. Yet we have only 7 of his, though we know there were more, although the 7 we have might actually be pasted together excerpts of more than 7 letters, there still is a lot missing. When it comes to other first century authors, we have either no letters or only a handful at most. Yet we should have letters from numerous apostles and letters communicating between churches in great quantity from every decade beginning with Paul. As to why we don't, there are no verifiable explanations to be had. It can be presumed only that they were destroyed or tossed aside without mention or explanation. It cannot be presumed that none were written. That would defy all common sense and all probability. For example, are we to think only Paul ever wrote doctrinal letters for the whole first 3 decades of the cult? That after Paul's many letters, of which we now have only a fraction, no one ever once wrote another doctrinal letter for over 30 more years? Then, suddenly, out of the blue, after all that time, Clement decided to write just 1 really long letter, and that's it? These are all extreme improbabilities. We could also have church records and family records. To argue that family documents were not preserved because Jesus' family died out or lost their files, or no one else considered such records important until a century or more later when they might have long since been tossed into the trash, is entirely plausible only if you assume that no one at first thought Jesus was the Son of God and Savior and therefore the most important historical person ever to walk the earth. But if you start with the assumption that people did think this from the start, and the letters of Paul certainly must indicate this if Jesus existed, then it becomes harder to explain the lack of interest in keeping his family records. It's not impossible that they would still all be abandoned or ignored, but that's not exactly what we would expect to happen, is it? Families of the time could receive census and tax receipts from the government, documenting their family relations, births, property, place of residence, and taxes paid, among other things. They would have deeds for any properties they owned. They would have written copies of any contracts they entered into. They would have documents pertaining to any trials they were involved in, civil or criminal. They would have copies of any letters they received, which they surely would have received if they were at all involved in the church administration and mission after Jesus' death. It's hard to imagine these would be of no interest at all. Likewise, church records. Homeowners who offered their buildings for services and meetings would have to have kept around all deeds and contracts and tax receipts related to them. That was the purpose of having such documents in the first place, to guarantee legal title and prove to the government that all taxes had been properly paid. What happened to all of those? Perhaps Christians changed homes and locations so often, perhaps persecution or apostasy created so much confusion, that no one could keep track of any church's location or legal or business affairs for hundreds of years. Perhaps we can imagine no one was interested in them, that these things were just considered too boring or obsolete. Perhaps conflicts among the churches led to getting rid of records that might have proved embarrassing to this or that faction. Perhaps they expected they'd all be burned up in the apocalypse anyway. Or whatever. Explain it all away as you wish. We still don't have them. Yet they certainly would have existed. What was in them? We have to accept the fact that we really don't know. But that still leaves the vast deletion of what must have been dozens, if not hundreds, of doctrinal letters in the first century, including several penned by Paul himself. That Christians preserved seven of his letters, or seven mishmashes of them, proves that they had the means and an interest in preserving letters. It therefore also proves they had the means and an interest in suppressing letters. All the letters that they chose not to preserve. Compared to Socrates, who inspired a vast quantity of literary activity immediately upon his death, in fact, already during his life, Jesus inspired none, or none that we have any knowledge of. And once literary activity definitely did begin, evidenced by the letters of Paul, later Christians discarded almost all of it. This can be explained on a theory of historicity, but only by adding ad hoc elements to it. Additional add-ons to the theory that explain why all this evidence did not accumulate for the church to preserve to us, as we would normally expect. And any explanation you accept has consequences you must also accept. No theory of historicity that does not address this can be credible. Likewise, the loss or absence of pagan and Jewish discussions of Christianity, entirely from the first century and almost entirely from the second. But as this is also true for mythicism, I will regard minimal historicity to be as capable of predicting this state of affairs as well as minimal mythicism, and therefore this silence does not affect the probability of either. But others might find that decision far too generous to historicity.